You're listening to Counterculture on RCR.
Reality Check Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to Counterculture here on Reality Check Radio with Marie. Joining me now from Australia is Sal Grover. She requires very little introduction to the Reality Check Radio listenership, having spoken to Paul several times. First time here on Counterculture, Australian entrepreneur and a fierce advocate for women and someone who's not afraid to call it how it is. Sal, it's so good to have you on the show. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me. I am very well.
There's so much we can talk about, but firstly, let's kick off with the Olympics. I mean, it's been a couple of weeks. I'm sorry, what a shit show, really.
Yeah, this is insane. Yeah.
It was madness. And then I see that Amin Khalif has decided that, you know, I'd love to know who prompted this because I don't think they had the brain power to do it just quietly. But this lawsuit naming Elon Musk and J.K. Rowling. Yeah, let's go and issue a lawsuit and name two of the biggest billionaires and outspoken spokespeople against this stuff.
This is the thing. So basically, you've got a situation where an individual with XY chromosomes is competing in the XX chromosome category. That's as simple as it gets. And everyone has called that out. Rightly so. And because this is not even like a category of sport where you could be like, you know, it's just unfair. This is also unsafe. Like, it's not like it's rhythmic gymnastics. It's boxing. So this is literally an XY human being, otherwise known as a man, punching XX people, otherwise known as women, in the face. And I thought it was pretty established in civilized society at this point that men punching women was bad. But apparently, if there's a medal involved, you've got half the world justifying it. Like, it has absolutely, completely blown my mind. And now this guy, whose name is Iman, like, I-Man, like, you just couldn't make this up. Like, it's just, if you were writing the screenplay of this, you'd be like, that's too on the nose. But he's now, well, he's filed, it's a criminal complaint that will probably, like, potentially escalate to, it is effectively a law, something like that, however French court system works. And yeah, he's named J.K. Rowling and Elon Musk, and then the news broke. The publication that had the exclusive on this was Variety, the Hollywood newspaper. Like, are you kidding me? It wasn't like it was like, you know, CNN or the New York Times or something. This is Variety. Like, the only way it could have been more ridiculous if it was literally like the Hollywood Reporter. And so the only reason you would name them in this is to get press attention on it, like really big press attention. And so obviously that's the intention of it. But I think that would backfire because if you're going to go after, so first of all, it's cyberbullying. That's the allegation. And I think it's pretty much, it's X, like Twitter, that is the main, like what they're mainly naming, but then within that they've named Elon and J.K. Rowling. But so if you're going to go after X/Elon and J.K. Rowling on cyberbullying, which then by extension is free speech and women's rights, you're going again after the two billionaires who have put everything on the line for this issue and will defend it to the end. Like, Elon spent $44 billion to protect free speech. You don't think he'll spend another billion to make sure it's secure? It's just, it is stupid. But the reason that he's done cyberbullying, in my opinion, is that he can't do defamation, because if he does defamation, then truth has to be established. In cyberbullying, apparently it does not. The research I've done on it, though, is that under French law for their online harassment stuff, it says that you've got to establish intent, that like you intended to like negatively affect their lives, which, you know, I've been speaking out about this. I don't have any intent to negatively affect this guy's life, and nor do I think it has been, because he actually won a gold medal while the alleged cyberbullying was going on. But what a horrible thing to try and establish, calling a man as cyberbullying. That would be the worst possible precedent you could set, especially in like something that would affect everyone like globally. If you were going to set like, so the French can decide that we all can't do that. Like, a lot of people have been tagging this dude's lawyer in my tweets. I've blocked him but I'm like, okay, what were you going to take us all to court because we know what your chromosomes are? Just prove us wrong. Just do a sex test and prove us wrong.
Well, it's one of those things, isn't it? I mean, they're trying to criminalize everybody saying the emperor is naked.
Yeah. Yeah, no, completely. Like, if And I think every single person that has been vocal about this is would say the same thing. If he did a sex test and it came out that he has XX chromosomes, we'd all go, okie dokie. Well, we got that wrong, but we're not wrong. And the longer he goes on of not doing it and the absolute refusal to prove us wrong in any capacity, like today he's come out with this makeover. I think it was the New York Post wrote the story, I mean, of like, yeah, he's, you know, makeup and hair done and everything. And this is really interesting because this has not actually been a trans issue, but they're now trying to turn into like a trans caricature of something. What's interesting, though, is like DSD / intersex conditions, which it appears what he may have, if that is, if I mean, he may not, he may just be a guy, but to be give him the most amount of sort of good faith is that there is a DSD condition involved here. So none of us are making the allegation that he is trans. It seems they now are. But in law, how DSD and gender identity / trans plays out is exactly the same. So you don't actually, when you're getting to this point of just talking about men and women's sports, there is no distinction. Man is man, woman is woman, simple as that.
And I interviewed a few weeks ago one of our hosts here who has been to about a dozen Olympics. He's probably one of our most celebrated broadcasters. And he actually was talking about the history of these DSD athletes in the Olympics, which, of course, they didn't know what they were back then, and how the whole one of them in later life was accidentally killed. They had a post-mortem, and hello, once they were on the table, all these things were discovered and found. And that's when the cheek swab was introduced. I mean, look, why can't we just go back to the common sense cheek swab? You know, how hard is that?
Most female athletes who are speaking out, well, every female athlete who is speaking out wants it. You then can go from there, okay, most of them you would assume do, / all of them, because it's only protecting their sport. You only have to do it once. It's a cheek swab once, and then it's on your record that your sex has been tested, this is what it is, and that's it. It's not like what the activists are always trying to display it as, is some sort of like genital inspection and things like that. No. There's no indignity here. It was in 1999 that the Olympic Committee stopped sex testing. So it's 25 years ago now. And since then, yeah, there has been, unbeknownst to me, now when you look back in the last 25 years, there's been a few men in women's sport, and we just didn't know. They were able to disguise it. I mean, Caster Semenya is obviously the most famous one. And I remember Rio, I watched it. And, you know, at the time I thought that I was watching like some absolutely exceptional female athlete. But I remember going, why are all the other women in these tiny little, you know, like the little like bikinis and like basically running naked, but the three who won it weren't? It's because they're men. they weren't even really disguising it. Like it was really out there that they were male, and I mean, they should be stripped of their medals, frankly. But if this whole drama could be fixed if they just brought back sex testing and actually had respect for the female category, they're welcome to make the male category the open category, because males won't be affected by that. If there is by some chance a woman that would be good enough to get into a male category, she just isn't, to be frank. She just isn't. I would love it if men and women were equally as fast and strong, but it's just not the world we live in. It's just, we've got to play the cards we're dealt. We just had the Olympics. We were able to watch the men's 100 meter final and the women's 100 meter final. The woman who won the women's 100 meter final would not have qualified even in the heats of the men's. That's different. And we're only talking a few seconds, but that's the difference. And so are we going to say that she's just not trying hard enough? Like the fastest woman in the world's just not trying hard enough? No, there is just obvious biological differences, and that's why we have women's sport. If you're just not going to actually make sure that the category is doing what it's supposed to do, there is no point to it. Why do you have it at all? So, yeah, I mean, the solution is so simple, and they just won't do it.
No. Now, before we jump off sport... Yeah, it is so simple. Before we jump off sport, though, the other thing that cropped up in being in Australia is, of course, where ideology becomes the other thing outside of sex when it comes to sport. And, yeah, Ray Gunn, I thought, now I'm a voyeur on X, okay? Mm-hmm. I am frequently lambasted by people that I know through this job that will say to me, Marie, we know you're there, but you don't say anything. But that's me and social media, another story. Anywho, I saw a tweet, or whatever they call them, these are a post from Anthony Albanese saying how proud he was, and this is just a wonderful day for Australian sport, for this ray gun woman. I thought that it was a parody account, but it wasn't a parody account, Sal. So that just shows you from the ridiculous to the more ridiculous.
Yeah, I have like two different things going in my mind with Reagan. So maybe even more than that. Like, so I'll start by saying I think her performance there was hilarious. And I think if she just leaned in to how funny it was, everyone would be slightly more forgiving. Like there is a lot of people who are, I've seen online, there are a lot of people who are supporting her at the same time. Like I'm going like, you know, like, come on, it's not that serious. It's just breakdancing, blah, blah, blah. But it still comes back to that thing of like the argument with men and women's sports. There is someone qualified who missed out. And that's, I think, the like what people get a bit like really annoyed about slash like there is like some taxpayer funded thing here. The if you just go beyond her performance at the Olympics, which like is hilarious, this is someone with a PhD in breakdancing, which I don't think we need, but okay. Like, I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, if you think that's really important, I think you should actually have to pay for that yourself, but okay. Like whatever it is, I don't know. I've also like art and like different fringe things being studied and recorded and all of that. Like, and I don't want to like diminish or demean breakdancing. I actually think it's a really great, like sort of art form, and people who do it are incredibly talented. But because Reagan is part of sort of this demographic of, you know, this, for the shorthand, the lack of a better, this woke sort of thing, these are the people that bang on about cultural appropriation all the time. And I just don't understand how, you know, if we eat Chinese food, apparently that's cultural appropriation, but a 36-year-old white woman from Australia can go and do a PhD in breakdancing and they're all going, well, this is brilliant. It's just, it's how it's just, you know, like rules for thee, not for me. It's the hypocrisy of it all that really bothers me. But if she just kind of went like, you know what, guys, yeah, this was really stupid and I kind of screwed up on this and like, I'm pleased you all got a laugh, I would be much more forgiving about the whole thing. Yeah. I mean, I'm not punishing her that much. Like, she seems like she has the intensity of the attention on her would be quite difficult to deal with.
Well, she'll be able to take that lived experience back to her PhD.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it is that, but I suppose it comes to me, it does come back to like, you know, I'm over here advocating to have no men and women's sports because we want the integrity of sport to be upheld and the integrity of the Olympics. And that does go across the board, and she was just not qualified to be there. I will say though, I have this thing that I think it would be really cool if for every event at the Olympics they just had one normal person doing it. So like, you know, like the 400-meter freestyle or something, they're like lane 10 and like just someone just a normal person, like you like win like a golden ticket or something, and like you're like, I've been called up, I've got to go and jump in the pool and do this. And so we can just see what like a completely normal person doing is. Like, they'd have to be carried out, like I'd have to be carried out in a stretcher. But so in a sense, I think that Reagan was like, oh, this is what it looks like if a normal person is in the Olympics. That's what it looks like. There you go.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, look, for me, it's a juxtaposition as well. I mean, the Australians are one of the premier teams at the Olympics. You're always right at the very top of the medal table. You have these incredible athletes across the board. And then Reagan.
Yeah, and I watched the video of like the qualifying rounds like here in Australia that she did, and there was Molly, someone I think is the girl that she was like sort of competing against, who was like blatantly significantly better than her. Still wouldn't have been as good as the really great ones who are in the competition, but she definitely was someone who could compete at a higher level than whatever the hell that kangaroo jump, like. Just people on TikTok in their living room should not be able to perfectly recreate an Olympic routine. Like no one can do what Simone Biles does or any of the other girls in like gymnastics. So effectively, it should be the same. If we want to have breakdancing being held as a standard, it should be the same. We should not be able to do it.
No, no. Well, there you go. It'll go down as something that will offer mirth, I think, for many, many years. On to some more serious topics, though. I spoke to Helen Hilton last week, and she brought to the attention the Law Commission here in New Zealand has issued a paper, issue paper 53, a review of the protections of the Human Rights Act 1993 for people who are transgender, people who are non-binary, and people with innate variations of sex characteristics. So essentially a discussion document about enshrining the rights of those in the T, add the extra symbols and what have you after that, beyond, in the alphabet soup into the Human Rights Act here in this country. Now, you're in Australia. You're a little bit further down the track than what we are. What do we need to look out for if we go down this path, Sal? What Pandora's box could we potentially be opening?
Well, first of all, I am very jealous, and I know a lot of other Australians are, that you guys are at least having a dialogue about this. We did not have that in Australia at all. I didn't know that our amendments to have gender identity happened until I got an Australian human rights complaint basically accusing me of breaking them. So that was a hard day at the office. So basically, okay, you guys are having discussions to have gender identity put into your Human Rights Act. We have had that happen already in 2013 under the Julia Gillard government. The gender identity was put into the Sex Discrimination Act. New Zealand's Human Rights Act and Australia's Sex Discrimination Act are two very similar acts. The reason being is that they're both based on CEDAW, which is the UN Convention for the Elimination of Violence and Discrimination, or whatever it is, against women. It's signed by 189 countries around the world. The only countries that haven't signed it are the ones we'd expect, like the really bad ones. And what's unique about Australia and New Zealand is that we really did put CEDAW into our law in full. Like when you sign a convention, an international convention like this, you basically have to like enliven it in law in some capacity. So Australia did that. I'm not sure what year you guys were signatory, but I'm assuming it was around the same time. Like we did ours in 1983. We signed it because CEDAW was created in 1979. We signed it in 1983. We got our Sex Discrimination Act in 1984. And it's quite simply quite a thorough recreation of CEDAW. So you guys have done it a little bit differently, but in terms of being able to defend it and what it's based on is very similar or slash the same. So when you have your legislation that is based on an international convention, you have to stay true to that. That's how the law works. That's how you're able to have it in law, like that legislation like that. So you can't then go and be in breach of it. So CEDAW, because it's for women, while it doesn't define what a woman is in there, because in 1979, evidently they didn't think that they had to, we'll never make that mistake again. When you read it, it is very clear that it is a document about biological reality. And so they're talking about female people. They're talking about women and girls, females. That's it. Really the only mention of gender in any meaningful way is about trying to eliminate the gender stereotypes that can oppress women. Like, so obviously women around the world are oppressed on the basis of their sex. The evidence of that, say, is in Afghanistan. They're not oppressed because of any sort of gender identity. They are oppressed on the basis of their sex, of females. They can't go to school because they are female. But then if you wanted to talk about specific, like, gendered type oppression, then again, to say, maybe use Afghanistan as an example, you would then go, okay, like what they're making them wear. That would be a bit more gendered than the straight up sex. But it's a crossover. It's still, I mean, you don't even have to really talk about gendered oppression. It's sex. It's really just always sex oppression. So in Australia, we, in 2013, gender identity was put in quite in stealth. They didn't tell anybody what was going on. Incidentally, it was 4 years before the Marriage Act was amended to allow for gay marriage in Australia. So if we're talking about these two different groups, so the LG group and then the T, the LG had to beg for their right to get married and for the law to be changed. The T got it changed in stealth. Now, which one is the more oppressed group there? Because we're always told that the T is the most oppressed minority on the planet, and this is simply not true. It's a complete lie. So how it plays out is it means that anything in society that is specifically sex-based, whether that is bathroom, change room, prisons, hospital wards, and any sort of service that is specific for a woman. So you might have a domestic violence shelter, rape crisis center, girl guides, you know, anything that is specific to women suddenly is, I would say, very confused, because now you're being told that you have to include people who just identify as women. Then it's in law that, you know, that a woman is just an identity, basically. And so it completely destroys these spaces, which in Australia, the Sex Discrimination Act was the law that allowed these places to exist. So the law that allowed it, women to have these rights is now the law that has taken them away, all because gender identity has been put in there. Now, it's very possible to make an argument in Australia that women still have all of the rights that the Sex Discrimination Act allowed us to have, because of the intention of the Sex Discrimination Act was clearly sex. However, because gender identity is in there and they took out, Australia's Sex Discrimination Act did define man and woman, but they took, in 2013, they took those definitions out. So it took the definition of man and woman out and put in gender identity. So it's completely muddled now. And for 10 years, no one had challenged it. But so when I got an Australian Human Rights Commission complaint for alleged gender identity discrimination, because for a female-only online platform I had created, I had said no to a male person who claims to be a woman. So he went to the Australian Human Rights Commission. I decided to fight it, because there's no point to the platform that I created if men are allowed on it. So it's either fight back or close up. And other places before me, like, this law had not been working well. A lot of places in Australia had been intimidated by the activists who have been interpreting the law as gender identity is the be all and end all. So I'm now involved in a court case called Tickle v. Giggle, most stupid name court case ever. But we're waiting for the verdict at the moment. And it is the sex versus gender identity court case to find out if sex still has weight in the Sex Discrimination Act. And part of our defense of that is CEDAW and defending CEDAW. And so we've done a constitutional challenge to state that the amendments, and we're right about this, the amendments are unconstitutional because they're not in line with CEDAW. We're in breach of CEDAW. And that is true. Like, it just is. There's different ways how they try and argue that we're not, that they're not, but they're wrong.
Well, because this is where your court case is so powerful, because, like, in this discussion document, they have a whole section devoted to the consistency of other liberal democracy societies. And obviously Australia is one of the ones outlined, along with the Canadians barking mad, a few things, some of the states in the United States. The difficulty is, of course, under the current Human Rights Act in New Zealand, sex and discrimination against sex is still protected. So my argument, well, my discussion with Helen last week was, as well, they've already won the right last year to change their sex on their birth certificate in this country by whim. So surely if they're able to do that, and therefore they identify and acknowledge sex characteristics on their birth certificates, why would they need to then codify this into the Human Rights Act? Because they were already protected under the Human Rights Act by choosing whatever sex they want to choose. Or is it just because of the confused or the greedy that want to be non-binary and not want to put a bob each way, or have a bob each way and not have to make a decision?
There's lots of answers to that question. So first of all, one of the things that we're fighting against is sex cannot be justified by what's on your birth certificate, because this, what gender ideology has done is create this concept of legal sex. Sex, again, was always just biological sex. It was just sex. Like, you didn't need to even say biological sex. Now you do, to differentiate whether you're talking about legal or biological sex. Legal sex is gender ideology. So if you have you're right in saying, like, if someone can go and change their birth certificate based on their gender identity, and that they're changing the sex marker, well, why are they changing the sex marker if it's a gender identity? That's the first question that none of them have an answer for. So if you had a situation, so if it was just that they were just changing the sex marker and they wanted to be covered under sex discrimination law, that would be actually a completely different fight. But we're not even having that fight. We're having a fight that says, you, based on your gender identity, you can change your identification document, the sex marker on your identification documents. But then on top of that, you need gender identity discrimination protection. How many protections do you need for a lie? So it's how deep and entangled it becomes. Like, you, anyone who has a gender identity or believes that they do, I don't think this is a real thing. This is a fad, a very evil, bad fad. But it's a completely man-made concept. Anyone who has a gender identity, all of the protections that they require actually are covered by sex. Why we have sex-based rights, why this has been established in human rights law, is because sex is the fairest way to categorize everybody and to provide what everybody needs. So when you try and have gender identity to supersede sex in law, you're actually going to be taking away rights from a lot of people in the name of giving more human rights to somebody, but they're not. They're privileges that they shouldn't actually be entitled to. The best example I can give is that you mentioned like non-binary. Okay, so if you have gender identity discrimination protection for a non-binary person, what are they being protected from in discrimination law? Because if it's just like freedom of belief that they should be allowed to have that, that's fine, of course, but that's covered just under freedom of belief. You don't even need to get specific about that. But if it's anything else, like how do you cater to a non-binary or a cat gender or an astrogender or any of the ridiculous neo-genders that they've created? How do you cater to that in society? Like, we don't have astrogender categories at the Olympics. Anyone who has a gender identity that isn't male, so females with a gender identity still compete according to their sex class, because as we were saying earlier, the reality of biological sex means that females cannot adequately compete with males. So that's why at the Olympics you had a few trans-identified females competing with females. But then you've got the males with a trans identity, they're also competing with the females. So that's the clearest way you can see that somebody with claiming a gender identity, the females still rely on their sex-based rights. The males rely on the privileges that gender identity affords them while taking away rights from everybody else. So to have gender identity in law literally takes away your freedom of association, your freedom of belief, and freedom of speech. When I was in New Zealand recently and I was, you know, sort of on the road talking about this, there were some people that said like, okay, look, I'm fine if gender identity goes into the law so long as it's clear that it does not override sex. And you're like, okay, cool. Then why have it? Because there's literally no work for gender identity discrimination to do if it's not overriding sex. So there's no point in having it.
Okay, so then I want to know two things. One is real world examples of how that is now playing out in Australia. And the second thing is what you've just described, is the what I call the identity totem, right? So where you sit on the either totem of oppression or identity, regardless. By putting this into the law, which you have done over there, because it means that if you then, on the identity totem, if you carry the T, you outstrip the W's, the women. And then also too, the T's also often, depending on your point of view, particularly once you get into the medicalization of children, you're actually creating a negative, and I don't like to use the G word, but a negative effect against the homosexual community, because it's been shown that if you just leave these kids alone, they'll just grow up to be lesbian or gay. So how do you then legislate, or how is the legislation now tackling complaints? Because I just know as a straight woman, if I wanted to take a complaint against anything, I'm screwed six ways to Sunday, because they're going to look at me and go, you're a white straight woman, darling, you got nothing to complain about. Whereas if you were trans-identified, and I'm now finding this with a lot of my male gay friends, they're like, we're almost as bad as you, darling, because they look at me and go, well, you're just gay. You're not trans. So how on earth do you legislate for the totem?
Well, you can't. I mean, in Australia, to give a real-world example beyond the one I'm experiencing, is Lesbian Action Group is a group founded by a bunch of lesbians in Victoria, Australia. They're awesome. They applied to the AHRC to have an exemption to be able to hold a lesbian-only event. So by definition, like, they were specific about it, this is biological females only, because that's what a lesbian is. It's a woman attracted to women. There's just, if that's not what a lesbian is, then there's no such thing as a lesbian. The Australian Human Rights Commission said no to them, basically saying that they have to include any male who identifies as a woman, and then on top of that, who identifies as a lesbian into their group. Now, if you've got a male who claims to be a woman who then says his sexual orientation is lesbian, you are dealing with a man who is claiming to be homosexual, but he's actually heterosexual. And then you've got the Australian Human Rights Commission going to bat for him and saying that you have to include this completely oppressed person. He's just a straight dude. Like, you would just say, I'm just a straight woman. This is a straight guy, but they will go to bat for the straight guy, but they won't go to bat for the homosexual woman and the homosexual man, or the heterosexual woman who also want female-only spaces. Literally, in terms of the totem pole of this, if you go with identity politics, where they say the absolute worst anyone could be is a straight white male, they're just evil across the board. However, if that straight white male identifies as a woman, he is suddenly at the absolute bottom of a pile. So why do you think they're doing it?
Mm.
What power it gives some of these, well, any man who claims it, but it gives them this power that in the identity politics world that they exist in, they wouldn't have that power anymore. So they're just taking it back. I cannot believe that these people are not seeing what's happening. I feel like I'm going insane. So it's just like, you guys are being played so completely by these men. But so the lesbian action group is appealing. The hearing is on the 2nd and 3rd of September, which I was going to be going to until I booked all of my tickets and hotel for Sydney, and it's in Melbourne. So now I'm not going. I can't believe I did that. But anyway, it is what it is. But they are appealing the decision. Now, I'm so excited that they are doing this because it's putting more heat on the Australian Human Rights Commission, who is essentially just a lobby group for the T at this point. Because the Australian Human Rights Commission intervened in Tickle Biggigle. So mine started with a complaint from them, and then it escalated to federal court. And the Australian Human Rights Commission intervened as amicus curiae to interpret the law, which they interpreted it as like, yay, gender identity, it's the most important thing ever, and that's all you've got to listen to, and sex is irrelevant. And this is like the sex discrimination commissioner saying this. Like, every part about this is the stupidest thing. You just go, like, how could this get even stupider? And then it does. So the Lesbian Action Group is appealing their decision. Now, I'm pleased that they're doing it. More heat on the AHRC. I don't see that the AHRC is going to change their position until they are forced to by either the federal or high court or new legislation. They're so all in on this. When they intervened in my case, well, then they applied to intervene. My case, the case against me. I don't want any ownership of this. But when they applied to intervene, they in the, sort of the document, there's a part where they list their expertise. But because there's actually no case history specifically of sex versus gender like this, they listed their expertise as all of the cases that they've intervened in the federal family court, where it was getting gender-affirming care to children. So they literally listed, it's like 7 or 8 cases where they have been sterilizing kids and they're bragging about it. And when I was reading this, I was just there going, they've put this in writing. Like, are you kidding me? Like, this is a human rights violation. And the federal human rights body of Australia is bragging about it. I like literally was trying to scream to people, like showing media going, look at what they're doing. No, I thought that if that story would blow up, I really did. I thought like people would go, okay, hang on, this is really crazy. Literally, it's never been reported on. I sit and talk about it like I'm a crazy person standing on the corner just screaming like they're sterilizing kids, but they actually are. And so, I mean, that's where it leads. Like if you've got an organization that has been utterly corrupted by an ideology, they are all in on it then. Like once you've sterilized kids, you can't back down, only if you're made to. Like you've got to, like for me, they are beyond like the band playing as Titanic sinks. Like they are in the kitchen making breakfast, thinking they're going to be serving it the next day because they have no other choice.
So which is why I found it such a puzzlement when the voice referendum came around, because let's face it, those who are the big pom-pom wavers for the voice referendum are very much donkey deep into all the gender ideology, right? They're very much of a machinist.
A few people say on my side of the gender thing that say would have maybe just a bit of a difference. So there is a bit of a crossover, but I think that, yeah, you could say broadly speaking.
Yeah, broadly speaking. So the voice referendum, with the exception of, I think it was at the ACT, was universally voted down. But this, which to me is just as big, because I looked at the whole voice referendum and I'm thinking, oh, Guy, if you guys want to see what can of worms you're going to open up with that, you need to spend some time over here and we'll give you an idea of that. You didn't do it. For me, it was like, okay, well, this is giving us some hope. But then you go the other side of it with all this gender ideology and you're way further down the track than what we are. I mean, as you said, we're at least still having the dialogue stage. And it amazes me how some people will just simply apply a willful blindness to this. And it's very much what I call the, if they haven't shit on your shoe, you're not going to worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I was saying before. Like, you know, you guys are lucky, at least you're having a conversation about this, because there's never been a gender law voted on in Australia. Not one. Not a single policy, nothing. It's all been put in stealth. There's few sort of last little bills that they've done that are state-based. They've had a little bit more attention because, you know, it's not 2013 anymore. It's now 2024. People are much more aware. So then, and the poison for this ideology is people to be aware of what it is, but they're just sort of ignoring everybody. But so I think it's really telling that when you put something that's quite ideological to a vote, you know, and the public just says no to it, like why didn't gender get that? Because I think that they know that no one would ever vote for these laws. And it always comes back to me of like I have a lot of respect, like whatever your position is on The Voice, I have a lot of respect that it went to a Democratic vote and people were heard. Like that's how it should be. And with gay marriage, I mean, like, even though I'm very much for gay marriage, and I just think like the concept of marriage is a man-made concept and it does evolve. Like, you know, women aren't sold into it anymore. We can also leave it. Like the rules of marriage have changed over time. So it's sort of, you can open it up to same-sex couples. I just don't think it's that controversial. I don't agree with making religious people, like I'm not religious, I'm atheist, but I don't agree with forcing religious people to you know, perform it or anything like that. Like this is all comes back to freedom of belief and stuff like that. But it's like we can all coexist in sort of these secular societies if democracy is working and the actual liberal principles of freedom of belief, speech and association are being upheld. But gender just shits on all of them. Like, just because you cannot have gender identity in society flourishing while people are aware of saying loudly that it's not, like, the truth about it. Because if a man is claiming to be a woman, the moment someone is saying no, he's not, the whole thing crumbles. And so The Voice is different to that, but I think that I understand what you're saying, like, in the sense that, you know,
Where are the normies on this, is what I'm saying. Where are the normies? The dads who don't want men in the little girls' changing rooms, the mums who are sick and tired of being gaslit to and know that this isn't
They're out there speaking. And I meet them in Australia every day. I get messages from people all around the world every day. When I was in New Zealand, I met so many just like, I'm a normal person as well. We're all just these normal people. We're all out there, but what's everyone coming together for on this issue to speak up against? Like when you have a nationwide vote, that's when you can see it. But a lot of people, like, yeah, if you're just like a dad or you're a mum and you're concerned with your kids with this, where's the united thing you can go to express it? Also, like, the fear of punishment of what they have put out there for everybody. Like, I mean, I've spoken against it. Look, I'm in federal court and having to pay what will in the end be $1 million to get my rights off.
So it's interesting you say that with your, because it's, you're still waiting, aren't you, for your judgment?
Any day now, yeah.
So
this comes out, we may have had a verdict. Like, literally any day now.
Yeah. So then one of the things I discussed with Helen looking at this, because, of course, we had our hate speech laws that were massively defanged, which would have included a lot of that in those laws. So that defanging, it's the same bad faith actors that were trying to push that legislation through, turn up in the acknowledgements of this discussion document. So they're obviously trying another avenue to get this entrenched in law somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, we have that, like, in the state that I live in, like, they've just brought in self-ID and it's already a disaster. And then they are trying to bring in hate speech legislation. I think it comes into effect. I haven't looked in a little while of where they are at that with that. But one of the reasons why I keep my house so clean is that I just fully expect police officers to turn up on my doorstep at some point and being like, ma'am, you've said men and women are not women on the internet. You're going to have to come into the station. Because, I mean, that's what they want. They want you to stop. Just to stop you speaking about it. And that's why, like, when I talk about this issue, obviously I come at it from a perspective of, like, female spaces and women's rights, because that's how I was brought into it. But I think that it sells this issue short to just focus only on the women's rights. Like, women's rights is definitely the canary in the coal mine. But every single person needs to realize that the threat of gender ideology threatens them just as much as it does women. Because if you care about being able to believe and say whatever you want, and you care about gender ideology, and then together, even if you don't give a shit about women's rights, but if we work together on this, we'll get women's rights. And women's rights that don't actually take away rights of anybody else. Like, women having female-only rape crisis centers don't actually take away rights from anyone else. They're just a necessary part of a society where, you know, if it was easier, if the more achievable thing was that we could go and just stop all male violence against women, that's what we'd be doing. But we can't. We can't change sort of the some parts of really bad human behavior. It's just there. Mm. And so what we've done as a society, as human beings, you know, evolved and grown, we've worked out that these are the different provisions that we need to make everything as civilized as possible. And this is just taking that away. Like, the fact that a rape victim could go to a hospital and not be allowed to choose the sex of the doctor who's going to do an examination on her. And then if a male was there, even if it was a male, and like just a male in general, or a male claiming to be a woman, and she can't object to that. What? That makes no sense. Like, who are these? This is what gender ideology does when it's put into practice. These are the, and that's like sort of one of the worst case scenarios that you've got of it. Then you've got sort of the more like just sort of ones that maybe don't feel as damaging, where it's just when people say all the time, like, well, why can't you just use somebody's preferred pronouns? So, because either I'm allowed to choose what I say or I'm not. It's that simple. Like, either I can talk about people how I choose to, or and I can uphold the actual meanings of words, or I can't. And so it is a bigger issue that it's not about just being polite to other people. It's this claim of being polite to other people or being kind while being so impolite and unkind to the other side. That was one of the things when I realized what was going on that really just shook me to my core. I was like, they're telling me to be kind at the expense of kindness literally to myself. Once you know, you can't look back. Like, you sort of wish that you never realize, because gosh,
Sal, you're talking to New Zealanders that have survived 6 years of the Jacinda Ardern regime. Believe me, we understand the hypocrisy of being kind. Yeah, but this is just it. I mean, the entire House of Cards is built on a lie. And it doesn't matter whether it's a race lie, a gender lie, a sex lie, economic lie, a political lie. It's all built on a lie. And the ultimate goal is to actually basically have compliance of a population. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't really matter what the road to Rome is, but it is what they're trying to do. And the manipulation of language and definition and things that we all knew in our adult worlds for our first, I don't know however many years, in the last 10 years have been turned on its head, in the last five, turned on its head, run through the washing machine, put through the waste disposal, and has come out as effluent at the other end. You know, it's just...
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things with gender ideology, why I think it is one of the most evil ideologies to ever exist, is because it is actually attacking human beings at our most basic instinct, which is being able to tell if someone is male or female. Like, this is something you actually just know. It is an instinct. It has been perfected over a lot of time with evolution, and it's a necessary survival skill. And apparently there is research that women can tell the sex of someone milliseconds earlier than a man can, because this was just something that women have needed to be able to do slightly more than men for our own safety. And so to tell us now that we have to ignore all of that, because I always say, like, I'm being taken to court for acknowledging what I see with my own eyes. At the end of the day, that's all it is.
Hmm.
So, yeah, that's it.
Well, I wish you luck with any, you never know, as we said, when this is. The verdict may be out, and I'm sure you'll catch up with Paul when that happens. I really do appreciate your time today. If people want to catch up on your great big bad subversive self on X, what do they find you under?
So I think if you just Google my name, like Sal Grover, but it's my Twitter X handle, whatever you want to call it, it's Sal Tweets, but I've always spelled my name incorrectly. So it's Sal, S-A-L-L, and then Tweets. And yeah, all updates, everything I say is there. And I've just started a new show called Turf TV, which is just a weekly thing, just basically summarizing the news that is happening, giving my interpretation, and then also just explaining different aspects of gender ideology of what it is. Like the episode I'm doing next week is on organophiles, which
there you go.
I won't give away what they are. Tune in.
Oh, look, that sounds utterly fantastic. I really do appreciate your time this morning. This has been Sal Grover here on Counterculture with Reality Check Radio. Thank you, Sal. It has been an absolute joy to talk to you this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.